Hello again, my friends. This is Tim Benal of BenalofAmerica.com with another edition of Benal of America Audio Season 1. It is December 10th, 2005. We continue this week with Adam Go Rightly, Part 2 of 2. We discuss Carrie Thornley, 60s counterculture icon who got wrapped up in the Kennedy assassination investigation and subsequently went pretty bonkers. It's a fascinating cautionary tale for anyone on the fringes of esoterica. And we have a lively discussion on that and a host of other topics as well. Here's a little bit about Adam Go Rightly if you did not catch last week's episode. He is a self-described crackpot historian, the author of The Shadow Over Santa Susana, Black Magic, Mind Control, and the Manson Family Mythos, and The Prankster and the Conspiracy, the story of Carrie Thornley and how he met Oswald and inspired the counterculture. He's also the author of the new book, The Beast of Adam Go Rightly, Collected Rantings, 1992 to 2004. Adam has been a guest on radio talk shows across the U.S. and Canada, and his articles have appeared in numerous publications such as The Excluded Middle, UFO Magazine, Paranoia, and Steam Shovel Press. You can contact Adam at your own risk at www.adamgorightly.com, and that is spelled AdamGorightly.com. This interview was conducted on December 1st, 2005. Adam Go Rightly, Part 2 of 2 on Benal of America Audio, Season 1.
All right, well, let's move on to The Prankster and the Conspiracy. This one I found pretty interesting. We're just sort of now maybe like a week or two past the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. I was listening to a lot of the programs on the radio that covered it, waiting to hear about Carrie Thornley because I was reading the book at the time. So it's good that we can get a chance to talk about him today.
Yeah.
Let me do a little bio of my own on Carrie Thornley, and then you can correct me and explain, flesh it out for me.
Okay.
Well, Carrie Thornley, he was born in, like, late 30s. He grew up, where did he grow up?
Whittier, California, California.
Grew up in Southern California, and then he tried, he's kind of a nerdy kid. He ended up, tried going to college, but that didn't last too long, and then he ended up going to join the Marines.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you. Yes, he joined the Marines, and while in the Marines, he was in the Marines stationed in Japan with Lee Harvey Oswald, of all people, and actually sort of became his friend, one of Lee Harvey Oswald's few friends in the Marines. Then he came back to the States in the early 60s, and formed a faux religion of sorts with a couple of his friends, and that grew into something big we'll talk about as we get into this. And then, of course, John F. Kennedy was assassinated, so the mainstream says, by Lee Harvey Oswald, and that sort of made Carrie Thornley a sort of unique character in American history because he had known Oswald for so long, and his life sort of tied in with Oswald a lot. And then as the investigations into the Kennedy assassination picked up, he became convinced that he actually was part of the conspiracy after all, and slowly sort of went crazy. And that's the thumbnail sketch of his life. Now you can take the ball here and run with it.
He sort of went crazy for a while, but then he kind of went uncrazy towards the end of his life, pretty much, from what I've gathered from talking to the folks that knew him towards the end of his life. He was still a bit paranoid about life in general, but didn't hit the extreme that it did in the late 70s when he really came to believe that he'd been a patsy like Lee Harvey Oswald, involved in the unwittingly in the Kennedy assassination, and that he had been basically mind controlled and somehow had been sucked into all the craziness surrounding the assassination.
All right. Now, how did you even get interested in Carrie Thornley in the first place? Because, like I said, he's sort of a fringe character, but of course,
yeah,
that's probably how you got into him, right?
When I first got involved with, once again, it goes back to the zine movement, the underground press, in the late 80s, I started picking up, got exposed to all of these underground magazines, and Kerry Thornley was a name I saw pop up time and time again, all these various obscure zines floating around out there, and I really at that time wasn't quite sure, you know, what to make of this guy who was just writing about these crazy theories and also talking about the Church of Subgenius and all these other odd things, the Discordian Society. So anyway, one of those names I kept seeing, and it was kind of registered back there. And then later on in the early 90s, a book came out called, I believe it was titled The 60 Greatest Conspiracy Theories. Might not have the title exact, but it was written by Vankin and Whalen. And one of the chapters in there was about Kerry Thornley, and basically how Thornley, you know, once again claimed he had been unwittingly sucked into the Kennedy assassination, and how he was a kind of guinea pig to some type of mind control that Oswald was also involved with, and that ultimately he was a Nazi breeding experiment, and that his family, his mom and dad, were involved with this whole thing. And it was, anyway, a pretty strange and interesting story. Afterwards, I heard Jonathan Vankin, who had written that piece, was kicking around the idea of writing a book about Kerry Thornley. And I thought, man, okay, I'll be ready to buy that whenever it hits the shelf. But that never happened. Over the years, I had started to correspond with Thornley and, you know, learned more and more about him, and started taking some notes, and, you know, I got to the point where once I had enough background material, I decided to go ahead and write the book.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, all right, let me start here with the first sort of question I had, and that was on the Discordian Society. Now, he formed that with a friend of his. Obviously, he probably never thought it would get as big as it did. sort of, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Discordian Society was, and then how it sort of evolved into like a into what it is, like sort of now, I guess, you know.
It basically came out of some philosophical discussions that Kerry Thornley had with his friend Greg Hill back in a bowling alley in Yorba Linda, California, in the late 50s. And somewhere along the line, they decided to hatch or create, or it was revealed to them that this new this religion called, based on the worship of the Greek goddess of discord, Ares, and they named their society or this religion the Discordian Society, based on the worship of the goddess Ares. And basically it was a put on of all organized religion, kind of a, just a spoof. These two young lads, and they were in their late teens at that point, these two lads came up with this. And so that's where it was in the late 50s. You know, he talked about after high school, Kerry went into the Marines, met Oswald, started writing a book about Oswald prior to the Kennedy assassination, which is a curiosity. Anyway, during this time, they kind of continued writing funny letters back and forth to themselves about the Discordian Society, and other people started getting involved with it. They eventually came up with the Bible of Discordian called the Principia Discordia, which was By and large, Greg Hill's baby, even though Thornley contributed to it and other people started contributing to it, the first run was like 5 copies, but over the years they started putting out more, got out there, and it got picked up by people in the counterculture. And it was kind of a art experiment, say, or a kind of group experiment that other people got involved with. So each edition of the Principia Discordia evolved and became something bigger with different people getting involved. Later on, Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea and folks like this picked up on it and got involved with it. And so by the late 60s, early 70s, it became a, you know, pretty much a phenomena within the counterculture, and with the release of Wilson and Shea's Illuminatus trilogy, they gave a nod of their heads to Greg Hill and Kerry Thornley, and actually the first book in the Illuminatus series was dedicated to them. During this whole period, you know, various editions of the Principia Discordia, it was totally underground. It was never picked up by a major publisher until years and years later.
Yeah.
And so that, in a nutshell, kind of talks about the history of the Discordian Society. But besides, you know, people being involved in working on the Principia Discordia, they're also involved with a number of different pranks.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, basically just screwing with the establishment.
Yeah, so it was
and
like...
So that was another function of the Discordian Society.
So it was
to
like...
basically bring about the collapse of society through humorous means. And of course, you know, what better religion to engineer that than one that's dedicated and worships the goddess of chaos and discord.
Exactly. So it sort of started like as an in-joke and then grew into like sort of like a bigger in-joke amongst a lot of people in the counterculture.
And it basically, or eventually, got out of hand at one point, at least in Kerry Thornley's eyes, that he'd helped unleash something that got out of his control and brought too much chaos into his life. As he was quoted as saying one time, if he knew it was going to bring all this weirdness into his life, he would have picked Venus instead.
Yeah, I remember that quote from the book, yeah. Now, what was the, I found this kind of fascinating, the significance of the number 23 in the Discordian religion.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that a little bit, because that was really interesting. It was odd.
Well, they kind of picked up on that from William Burroughs,
yeah,
the author who looked into the 23 enigma and just found a lot of weird occurrences surrounding the number one having to do with a flight 23 or a shipwreck 23, where the number 23 kept popping up. And so there's some weird paranormal, whatever, synchronistic things going on with the number 23. And so this got picked up on by the Discordian Society, and I think it's a common thing. People who've started looking in at the number 23 start investigating this. In their own lives, they start seeing the number 23 show up anywhere, and it, you know, perhaps it's just a form of programming ourselves to look for something in particular, and all of a sudden we start seeing it popping up all over the place. I remember I lent a friend of mine Robert Anton Wilson's Cosmic Trigger a few years ago, where he talks about the 23 Enigma in that book, and all of a sudden, my friends started seeing it popping up everywhere, and it kind of wigged him out, and he gave me the book back half finished.
Oh, man. Now, how did this Discordia, how did it, like, spread around? Like, were they all just hanging out in California at the time?
No, they were across the country, and, Bob Wilson was, he was in Chicago, and, you had different people in New Orleans, and it was just, they met by however means. A lot of the Discordian members never actually met each other. The only contact they had were these letters or different. A lot of times, for instance, Greg Hill would come up with some kind of funny collage, and he'd send it to the next person on the list. They'd get it. They'd add something to it, add it to the next person on the list. And a lot of the folks involved in the Discordian Society on this mailing list, they didn't use their real name. Carrie Thornley was a lot of things. The Bull Goose of Limbo, Omer Khayyam Ravenhurst, Greg Hill was Malaclips the Younger. You had different handles folks were using. So some of these people never really knew who they were talking to or who they were involved with, which made it all the more curiouser and more fun.
Well, I guess you kind of touched on something that that I had thought when I read the book too. I was like, is that sort of now like a contributor to your use of the name Go Rightly? Is that like that's sort of an homage in some ways?
Actually, during the course of working on the book, I met with a lot of the original members of the Discordian Society and the core group. They all knew each other. It was Bob Wilson and Kerry Thornley and Greg Hill once again, and Bob Newport and Louise Lacey, these folks who were, not only involved in the Discordian Society, but were really involved in the counterculture movement. And, at one time or another, they adopted Discordian names. And, that was the whole thing behind the Discordian Society. When are you ready to become a pope? And the answer is when you say you are. And so during the course of talking to these folks, we came across a lot of the original material and some of the old Pope cards, which I started distributing over the years. And so eventually, Go Rightly wasn't a Discordian name, but I came up with my own Discordian handle, which is the Wrong Reverend Houdini Kundalini of the Church of Unwavering Indifference. And Louise Lacey, who is known as Lady Ilfab in the Discordian Society, really enjoyed that name. She, Louise's handle, Lady Ilfab, interestingly enough and humorously enough, came from an encounter she had with Black Panther Eldridge Cleaver in the late 60s. She worked on counterculture magazine, Ramparts. And she was an editor there, and Cleaver was involved with the magazine. And really, she was pretty good friends with Cleaver and worked with him on some of the stuff he was involved with for Ramparts. But Louise is a very strong-willed and forceful person. She won't, she'll tell you where it's at. And I guess one time, and she's also an anarchist, and at one point, I guess she got Cleaver riled up, and he called her a fucking anarchist bitch. And so that's how she got her FAB handle, Lady L Fab.
That's a great story. It was sort of like you'd spread it around to the different people around the country, and you send a letter to the all the people sort of add their own sort of stuff into it.
Yeah, they'd have what they called something Jake Day, where they'd Greg Hill orchestrated a lot of this stuff. He'd send out a letter to the list saying, on this date, send some funny, crazy, pointless, weird something to this person here who maybe is a magazine editor for some conservative publication. They did that with, for instance, the John Birch Society. And part, you know, one of the things the Discordian Society did was resurrect the Bavarian Illuminati, I believe, from all the research I've done. They started talking about the Illuminati once again, that they were the conspiracy of all conspiracy and they were behind everything. And during that period, the John Birch Society was getting into these stories about the Bavarian Illuminati. So, you know, Thornley and Wilson, all these guys started sending letters claiming to be part of the Illuminati, you know, to the John Birch Society magazine just to screw with them all the more. So, that, you know, that was some of the projects they were involved with. And I talk about it in the book, Kerry Thornley in Cahoots with Robert Anton Wilson, who was an editor at Playboy, and it was actually edited the Playboy forum. They planted a letter and an answer in one of the editions, basically creating this mythology about the Illuminati, that they were had behind all the major political assassinations. And so it's created this whole mythology, and you're not sure how much they actually were involved with this, how much they're really truth there is behind all these legends of the Bavarian Illuminati, but these are the type of projects they're involved with, basically to create myths and to expand people's consciousness.
So you think, can we compare it to sort of like groups that form up on the internet now, with how they correspond? They might not ever meet each other, but...
Oh, exactly, yeah. That, what they were doing, you know, the internet was the next obvious evolution or next step, sort of stuff they are involved with, you know.
Yeah.
With all the different paranormal or whatever kind of news groups you want to get involved with. You know, back then when they were involved with it, you know, you had quite a time lapse sending letters across the country. Everything's very immediate these days.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they were definitely a precursor to what has come after them.
And how prevalent do you think was the drug use amongst this group of people when they were creating and sort of passing along the Discordian movement, when they were moving along? Was it as prevalent as one would suspect, or was that sort of like an overblown myth of the 60s?
Well, it was different back then. When you talk about drug use, I think everybody who was involved in the counterculture during that period experimented with LSD and other things, you know, but their involvement, I don't think, was rampant. They did as much experimentation with pot or whatever as anybody else did. It definitely influenced, you know, what they did, but, you know, it kind of came with the territory back then. It was all part of the experience.
Yeah. How mainstream was Thornley in the 60s before he became famous for being associated with Oswald? Was he just sort of like, was he a big name in the counterculture movement?
He wasn't a big name, but
his influence
he probably should have been eventually. He was involved, for instance, with the libertarian movement. He was really a pivotal player in the early 60s. You know, he examined a lot of different political philosophies and things and ideologies, and got involved with the libertarian movement, which was pretty conservative in the early 60s, and he got involved with the counterculture and was kind of one of the first persons who got involved in combining anarchy and libertarianism. So he was basically trying to pull together people from the left end of the political spectrum to bringing in the people from the right, the more conservatives, and basically trying to bring these political spectrums together, which I think he was ahead of his time, and he used to have great parties where, when he was living in Watts at his house, he'd, just bring in a colorful cast of characters, hippies and conservatives, and try to just getting some open discussions going. So he was involved with that. I think he was ahead of his time there. He helped organize some of the human beings, were big events. The first big psychedelic dancing in the street events that happened. But he was never known nationally as like an Abby Hoffman or a Jerry Rubin or one of those guys. But he was definitely known of in the underground. Never became a household name by any stretch of the imagination.
This is kind of asking you. So he was in the military, and he's in there with Oswald, and they were like pretty good friends.
As good of friends as Oswald had, they couldn't have. Kerry stated that they weren't close friends, but there was a bit of an affinity between them. Oswald was at that time studying Marxism, and so was Thornley. So they had various and many lengthy conversations about politics and religions and these type of things. So, if the Thornley-Oswald relationship was probably the closest one that Oswald had during that period when he was in the Marines.
Yeah, and it sounds like, like you said, he was writing a book about Oswald before the Kennedy assassination, so he saw something in Oswald that he could sink his teeth into.
Yeah, originally, Kerry was working on the book, which is called The Idle Warriors. It was basically a composite character made up of Kerry and Oswald and a few other Marines he knew during that period. After Oswald defected to Russia, when Thornley heard about that, he went, "Oh, wow, that's pretty wild." From that point forward, the character of Johnny Shelbourne, who was based entirely on Oswald. And so, this is quite a curiosity that he was writing this book, based primarily on Oswald, a good 3 years before the assassination.
Yeah, that is pretty strange, and I'm sure it added fuel to the fire of conspiracy theorists.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Jim Garrison, the movie Oliver Stone's JFK is based on Jim Garrison's investigation. Garrison was a DA in New Orleans. He believed, that Thornley was part of the group of conspirators involved in the Kennedy assassination, and particularly Thornley was one of the people who basically set up Oswald to be portrayed as a commie sympathizer and a lone nut assassin. And Garrison felt that his book, The Idle Warriors, was basically used to present Oswald in that light.
And that's how the Oswald character pretty much is portrayed in the book, right? That he's sort of a dissident?
Yeah, right. Yeah, in The Idle Warriors. And then later, Thornley also ended up writing one of the first books on the Kennedy assassination called, aptly enough, Oswald, where once again he presented somebody who, you know, was interested in Marxism and leftist politics. And, you know, once again, Garrison thought that basically this was a design and that Thornley had been used to write this book once again to portray Oswald in this light.
And, like, from what the best you can understand, was Thornley, was that the case, or do you think Thornley was just, that he was just like a writer and thought it would be an interesting book?
I think he was just a writer, and he was trying to make a name for himself, and saw a golden opportunity there with Oswald.
Yeah.
Now, there's the distinct possibility that he was being used, and, you know, possibly even to write these books, but if that was the case, it was he was being used unwittingly, not to his knowledge.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the area I get into in the prankster and the conspiracy about a group of shadowy characters that Thornley met in New Orleans prior to the Kennedy assassination, who he believed had sucked him into this group of conspirators that were involved in the assassination.
Yeah, that's right where I was going to go next. The,
okay.
The character of brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And some of those conversations that Thornley had with, I forget the name of the other guy, but brother-in-law and his...
Slim Brooks.
Yes. Is it Lynn Brooks?
Slim Brooks.
Oh, Slim Brooks, yeah. Like the conversations about how they'd kill Kennedy and things like that. I mean, Thornley, he's back from Japan, and he ends up in New Orleans the same time Oswald is. So he's pretty much seems to be right in the thick of what's going on prior to the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, that's the whole weird thing about it, too, is that Oswald was in New Orleans, you know, during the same period. Thornley was, you know, in 60 and 61, and according to Thornley, they never met each other while they were there. The two individuals he met, brother-in-law and Slim Brooks, as you indicated, they had a lot of different conversations, and one of those was a theoretical conversation on how to assassinate a president, and in particularly John F. Kennedy. And, you know, at the time, Thornley considered these conversations, you know, to be nothing more than basically morbid theorizing.
Yeah.
Something fun to do. Thornley was a rabid anti-Kennedy. He hated Kennedy's politics. And, you know, some people ask, you know, why would somebody be having these conversations with somebody? And why was Thornley messed up or involved with all these shadowy characters? Thornley commented that he was getting to know all these curious individuals, brother-in-law and Slim Brooks, because they were involved with, or at least they claimed to be involved with the New Orleans underworlds, and that they had connections with government intelligence agencies and these type of stuff. And Thornley was basically seeking out these colorful characters because he planned to write a book on the New Orleans underworld during that period. And so not long afterwards, Kennedy gets assassinated, and all these strange, curious conversations that Thornley had, he didn't think much of at the time. Then I guess we should fast forward to the late 60s, 67, 68, and you know, during this time, Kerry was back in California, getting immersed in the counterculture movement, psychedelics, was involved in a mate swapping group and all of these type things, when he ends up getting indicted by Jim Garrison, who's claiming that Thornley was involved with the CIA and the Kennedy assassination.
Now, let me just backtrack for a second here with you. After the assassination, how mainstream did the story of Thornley being in the Marines with Oswald, did that come out and people were like, what's that all about? Or was that sort of like just he knew about it and maybe only a handful of people?
Well, you know, it was known, but it wasn't something that national media really covered. Kerry did testify before the Warren Commission during that time, and basically just recounted his experiences with Oswald. So yeah, he did kind of make the national stage on that, but you know, the Warren Commission basically just tried to put that baby to rest as soon as possible, and you know, Kerry tried to capitalize with his book Oswald, but I don't think they really ever published that many copies to begin with. And if you can find one now, it's just a slim paperback volume, but they go for $50 to $100.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Did he now after it happened? He wasn't into the conspiracy aspect of it much. His attitude was more like, wow, that guy I knew in the Marines, he flipped out and shot the president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was more his attitude.
Yeah, and, you know, it wasn't until the Garrison investigation started when Kerry started reexamining a lot of this stuff. You know, Kerry initially thought that Garrison was off his rocker and that he was being persecuted. You know, Garrison claimed a number of things. Once again, that Kerry was part of this apparatus in New Orleans that were affiliated with CIA and the intelligence community that engineered the assassination, and that Kerry was one of the infamous Oswald doubles, impersonators running around Texas and New Orleans prior to the assassination, impersonating Oswald later to set him up as a patsy in the crime.
Yeah.
And so eventually the key suspect in Garrison's probe, Clay Shaw, played by, I think, Tommy Lee Jones in the movie.
Yep, yep.
He was cleared of all charges. That was around 1970 or so, and shortly after the charges were dropped against Kerry Thornley. And fast forward about 2 or 3 years after that, Thornley picked up a copy of the Yipster Times, which was a yippie magazine put out during that period, and he saw a story in there that dealt with three tramps that were picked up in Dealey Plaza following the assassination. And the basically the gist of the article was that these three tramps were actually intelligent agents in disguise who were involved in the Kennedy assassination, and the author of this article, A.J. Weberman, claimed that one of the individuals in question, who was known as the Old Man Tramp, was in actuality CIA agent E. Howard Hunt, notorious agent who was also involved in the Watergate break-ins. When Kerry saw this photo, he immediately, actually, it was a couple photos, and the one was E. Howard Hunt and the tramp, and comparing the two. And Kerry saw these photos, he immediately recognized E. Howard Hunt as being the shadowy character he had met in New Orleans way back when, known as a brother-in-law. And at that point, Kerry began to suspect that he had been you know, sucked into this whole Kennedy assassination craziness. And as the years progressed, he continued to evolve his theories and, you know, eventually he believed he was mind-controlled and all these other things, and basically used as a patsy like Oswald.